Hello and welcome to ISE Season 3, Enablement History, broadcasting from OSC, the OrchestrateSales.com property.
Welcome to the Inside Sales Enablement Podcast. Where has the profession been? Where is it now? And where is it heading? What does it mean to you, your company, other functions, the market? Find out here. The Inside Sales Enablement Podcast starts now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Inside Sales Enablement Season 3, Enablement History. And boy, do we have the epitome of past, present, and future enablement right here with me, Dr. Brian Lambert. And I might take up the first 15 minutes just introing him, and then I'll let him fill in the blanks on anything I missed. So he was, of course, the original co-host of Inside Sales Enablement. So we've got alumni back. He was also the co-founder with me of OrchestrateSales.com. Personal history and legacy for me. He was one of the original sales enablement. In fact, he was number two, if you think about it through the lens of Scott Santucci founding the sales enablement practice at Forrester back in the day. The first person he hired was Brian. So he was employee number two through the lens of sales enablement consultancy. And back then he was just sharing a tidbit with me. He did a Google search on sales enablement back in that 2008-ish timeframe and got 100 hits. He just did it this morning in the pre-show. How about 6 million? So I think we're on to something, folks. And so he is unique as well in that when we talk about the flavors of sales enablement, and yes, of course, he was there at the original founding and one of those 100 coveted four founders I'm hunting down over time was right there with Scott and the other 99-ish. And he does have, in fact, a PhD in essentially sales. And that was by choice. He addressed it through organizational behavior with an emphasis on sales, did a dissertation or two or three academic journals. He's been cited over 200 times. He's maybe on Howard Dover's heels. And he's done a combination of pretty much all of the flavors. He's been a salesperson with a quota. He's been a sales manager with a team. He's been a sales enablement manager with a team of, I don't know, 20 plus. And most recently, and I'm excited to hear more, his current title, Big Data Value Architect at Elastic, where he is in a marketing messaging role, messaging enablement. So all of that said, Brian, you would think I didn't miss anything, but fill in the blanks for me before we dive into the coveted seven questions of ISE.
I appreciate it. That's probably way enough about me. It's interesting. I don't get a chance to really reflect on that. I appreciate that. And enough about me, though. I think for me, it's quite an interesting time. There's a lot going on, and I look forward to definitely exploring that. And thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely, Brian. Ecstatic to have you here. Question one is almost funny to ask you. When did you first hear the words sales enablement and what did or do they mean to you, Dr. Brian Lambert of sales enablement?
Yeah, it was probably 2008-ish. The first time I heard it, I was like, I have a lot of people background. So I thought about this idea of enabling others as a negative thing. Like you're an enabler and to bad behavior. I did read an article on Reddit that asked, somebody posted, why do salespeople all take drugs or drink too much? And that's quite an interesting Reddit thread last week. But
we could go down a rabbit hole on that one, couldn't we? Yeah.
So that was the first time. And I remember looking at who owns the domain name. And somebody did. And I think it was Craig Nelson. And
correct.
You might want to have him on the show. And
yeah, he's done it. That very bullet point. You nailed it, man. Yeah.
So that's how I first met him. And there were a couple of like online portals back in the days of wikis were big and people just pouring articles out. And that's where I found it. And then I found Scott, who was at a conference, and I heard him speak about his blueprint of sales. And had a really interesting conversation with him there.
That's awesome. So what was there ever anything other than those two words when you and Scott were talking and he was developing this blueprint? Was it a potential, well, hey, maybe we shouldn't use the word enablement? Or was that the thing that made sense and you got on board with him? What did that look like behind the curtain?
Oh, yeah. It made sense because the way we've always explored it is that enablement is, it's a function, and it's a function that drives, you know, sales excellence. But at the time, we didn't really have everything fleshed out, but it was very robust because it covered everything from traditional sales training behaviors all the way through to this idea of being a value architect. And that's where my title now is Value Architect. That's where I originally heard that. And Scott shared his the vision of value architects communicating value and being orchestrators, which we didn't use that word, but the concepts that we've worked on now for 20 years or so as the first conversation we had. Enablement then was really not the discussion. It was more of the concept to what could this become? And let's just call it enablement. And when we were at Forrester, Scott had to do a lot of work to sell this idea that there was a crowd, that there were people doing this because they were traditionally a siloed view, the people in marketing, the people in sales training, the people in sales ops. And is there really a role? And we spent a lot of time trying to explain to people that enablement really is the first new digital economy role, right? It didn't really matter where it sat and didn't really matter what it was called. It was this idea that it was not bound by traditional siloed thinking. And it worked in a way that it helped people communicate value. And the definition of value is completely changing. So that's why you need this role. And that idea is, it really started back in the 2008 timeframe.
I heard you use the word role. I heard you use the word function. In fact, Scott put a poll out. I don't know that he came back and said, hey, here's what the consensus was, but is sales enablement a role, a function, a profession?
A process, a technology.
Process. Yeah.
Yeah. My take is, well, it's one of those things where I've been in it for a long time, and I don't know if it will ever become the vision that we had, because I think it is mostly a role and a technology. I don't necessarily see it evolving to this strategic function that we envisioned. And there's a lot of things that point to the fact that it's not making it, but most of it has to do with the fact that the sales enablement folks that I talk to, many of them are not really focused on the same things that sales are from a strategy perspective and a go-to-market perspective. And the challenge that I have with a lot of sales enablement discussions today is they're not grounded in data and accountability. Salespeople are grounded in data and accountability. They're the ones that get fired. I know in the last year, personally, at least 20 salespeople who've been fired for not hitting quota. And they're in organizations that have sales enablement. And it's like, when do sales enablement people get fired? And that accountability and that focus on the numbers is not prevalent in most enablement, quote unquote, teams. And that's why I don't think it'll become a strategic function.
Without that, but there's a shot, if we can close that gap and be more metric based, because the counter to that is, I would argue from what I've seen and heard, speaking to people reaching out to you, the profession, the role, whatever you want to look at it through the lens of, is taking a pretty good hit as the economy's had its slapper three. And as you and I both, I know, vehemently agree, there was such a huge opportunity that COVID presented. And the first two seasons of the ISE leaned way into that and went through the COVID time. Is that an opportunity that you think has been missed, or is there an opportunity to pull up the ship?
So if you use the lens of the flavors, which I think your listeners are familiar with, the flavors of enablement, if you were to use that as a shape sorter, triangles and squares and circles, those flavors are message enablement, pipeline enablement, there's an organizational enablement, and there's this idea of talent enablement that are all flavors or pillars of quote unquote enablement as a function. And I think most of the sales enablement people would get really sorted into this talent enablement bucket. And then if you look at what they're doing, there's quite a few teams that are really program management. They're basically event planning. So they're event planning sales kickoffs and sales events, but they don't actually do the training. Like they don't have the skills to actually hold the room. They don't actually do the sales training. So they're really event planners and coordinators of people to show up at events. So talent enablement, one. And then two, when you think about talent enablement all the way from the hiring profile to getting people promoted, et cetera, are they getting people promoted? Because a lot of salespeople are getting fired. So right. The talent enablement angle, if I sort everybody into that, what percentage is that? I think it's really high. It's probably, my guess is, 85 to 90% of sales enablement is really talent enablement. And when you look at what they're doing, I don't think they're actually providing that service of what Scott would call hire to retire. So underneath that, if I say 85% is talent enablement, there's 15% left. Where's everybody else? They're hard to find in message enablement, which is what I'm doing now. That's a whole other area of how do you create sales messaging, and especially when you think about the value of companies and communicating value. And then you have pipeline enablement, and most sales enablement that do pipeline enablement close to it are really in the technology space, working on outreach or et cetera, top of the funnel type things. They're not full pipeline enablement. And then organizational enablement, how many reorgs or mergers have enablement people actually been involved in? I've been somewhat fortunate to be in the room where we're actually redesigning an enablement function during a merger and figuring out the roles and the processes and things like that. And I just don't think there's many people that have done that are in the quote unquote sales enablement space. They're in other roles and other functions like go-to-market, strategy, teams, commercial organizations. They're considered more of the strategists, and enablement's really the tacticians in talent enablement or sales training.
Yeah. And those percentages are generally the same ballpark. I hear a 70 to 80% talent, a 10 to 15% message, and then the rest is some combination of demand and administration / organizational. But a lot of folks go, why are you even bringing that up? That's rev ops, that's sales ops.
I've been in those conversations too. So if you look at, okay, let's forget where people sit and let's forget where they report into for a second. And let's just look at headcount and let's just pull them out of an organization and give everybody an index card and throw it on a table and then have the executive team come in and say, okay, which roles do you think is doing sales enablement? That's where things get interesting, because without the org chart and flats rev ops or they're over there, that's an internal lens. But when you take a external lens and say, who's responsible for really helping salespeople sell, you're going to end up in a really fascinating spot, which is, let's say you threw out 300 index cards and they're people that technically sit in marketing. They're people that sit in rev ops. They're people that sit in go-to-market teams. And then there's these enablement index cards that are labeled enablement. There's quite a few people that help salespeople sell that leaders would consider quote unquote sales enablement in that definition. So that's the upside of that we envisioned for enablement, was to orchestrate all those resources. But I think what's happening is the org chart is getting in the way, and our siloed thinking of who reports into who and all that. And it creates this redundancy, right? That's why you're seeing so many layoffs.
So really, Brian, we've covered off on position one from that founding meeting. Enablement is a strategic approach with different flavors aligned to eliminating the friction in each of those parts of the system. Position two is, to me, what you just described. To accomplish this, sales enablement needs to be charted and run as a cross-functional business within a business. and what that means to me, and I'd love to hear your take and begin this. Is there a remedy, right? Is there a path forward for sales enablement, revenue enablement? And we'll get to that in a minute. As a profession, might it be to look at it as exactly that, a cross-functional business within a business where not necessarily everyone has a sales enablement title and definitely doesn't directly report, but might dotted line. And maybe it's to a CRO that has both marketing and sales. I'm seeing more and more of that and getting some traction talking to CROs who are like, yeah, I love enablement and my team is in enablement, whether they have a label or not. What's your reaction to that? Is that in line with kind of your thoughts and where you were headed?
As a new digital economy function, the silos should be reorganized by different types of silos, and we should be thinking about the value we're creating. Let's not run around and espouse massive reorganizations need to happen. If you move beyond that and say, where is the value created? How do we do this? There's definitely room to work cross-functionally, and absolutely we should be doing that. And there's a lot of leadership in that when you do that, and there's a lot of influence that you can wield. It's just, do you have the logic? Do you have the structure? Do you have the discipline? Do you have the presence? Do you have the, Siobhan would say, the gravitas to do that? And that's where I think things could be a lot better. And I think, for example, what I've done is I put a lot back out to the community, right? Very few people have actually engaged me on the things that I've put out. I know you have, and we built the whole Orchestrate sales site. But if you look at the product market fit, so to speak, of this, we don't have it, right? So this, in other words, the things that we're talking about on this podcast are not mainstream. We don't have the mass mind share. Now we have other groups like Sales Enablement Collective, which would have better product market fit, which is around more tactics and things like that. So there is a whole MBA around orchestration and a whole MBA around enablement. And if you look at that as course material and a profession, who's going to participate in that and want to spend the time, that investment? And that's where I've always had in the back of my mind that there's a lot of upside and a lot of possibility. But over the last 20 years or so, it's been a tough pill to swallow that folks don't necessarily want to do that. They don't know what they don't know. They're not curious. They don't want to. If they are curious, it creates a lot of friction for them and others internally to get outside of their traditional siloed swim lanes. These are all things that I've gone through, and I know it's not comfortable.
Yeah, Brian. And you know what? I love talking with marketing hat Brian through the lens of message. Now that's where you're sitting in your worldview, because when I hear you say, hey, Eric, that there's not a product market fit necessarily for orchestration. There might be a 1%, if you're lucky, right, out there that truly want to embrace that and get that MBA. And the reason why maybe some of these more tactical approaches out there are working is that's more what the market's hungry for, is give me the things that I can do to be relevant, to maintain the job. Luckily, I think where those two things meet is what you were alluding to earlier. Help me show my value. Help me show my impact as a function. And I would argue that's the one place where we have some traction. And I do see a future, the more that we're able to get that foundational, here are the metrics, here is the foundational charter that includes alignment with executive objectives that are all, if you're doing it right, metrics driven, where you can see that value and impact and then elevate and hopefully become even more cross-functional, even if you have to start at talent.
That's right. Absolutely. And there's a way to do that. It's a bit uncomfortable, admittedly, because it's outside of traditional roles. It's outside of what everybody else is saying. And that's where you have to have this forward lean. And you have to think a little bit differently around what is your value. And then more importantly, who are you helping and who are you serving? And are you trying to be comfortable? And do you view your job as the 9 to 5? Or when it comes to serving salespeople, is it really about what the organization is telling you they want? Or is it really trying to find a way to get the organization what it really needs? And that's two different things. That's sales, right? There's a difference between what people say they want and what they really need. And that's where I scratch my head at enablers, which is, I chuckle at that word, hey, I'm an enabler. And I'm like, okay, what are you enabling? And I get back to most sales enablers are not in the numbers. They couldn't tell you what the pipeline activity was and all that. They're not able to get into and view the same day-to-day reports that managers are. Some of them don't even have access in Salesforce. And then you get to, we need to get outside of our comfort zone. We need the business to do things differently. That's called selling. That's sales skills. That's literally selling. That's what salespeople do. So if you're feeling boxed in or you feel like you don't have what you need, go sell it. That's right. What salespeople do. That's how innovation happens. That's how evolution happens. And that's where I encourage folks to really step into and try to make things happen and be a salesperson, get closer and actually, have you done sales training? Have you taken sales training? Have you actually tried to pitch the solutions at your company? Have you tried cold calling and getting a meeting with somebody? A lot of sales enablers haven't done that. They would rather, unfortunately, they would rather shit on people. You should do this. You should do that. And we're over here. And let's track your adoption of things and let's track how many things you went to so we can wield that power and feel good that we got people to show up. And meanwhile, they miss quota, get fired. And we're wondering why what we're going to be eating for dinner at sales kickoff when we show up. There's this disconnect between reality and what the role could be and should be to me. And reconciliation, I think everybody has to do that. That's something that I've certainly had to do.
We're pretty deep into the orchestration thing, which is a rarity for me. So I'm going to go ahead and go a click deeper. And with you and Scott and the concept of this commercial orchestrator that is truly orchestrating a cross-functional business within a business, to, in my mind, put a bow around this whole thing, I'll just throw out a what if, and I'd love to hear where it lands with you. What if sales enablement was modeling what good looks like in how they interact with the C-suite, are able to have the gravitas to get that seat at the table in order to think in cross-functional alignment? And by the way, in doing all of that through the lens of how do I empower my customer-facing frontline to be able to do the same? If I am modeling internally, hey, I've been able, I have a seat with our CRO, CIO, with even the procurement internally to learn from what, and that's one of the things that Christopher Kingman was talking about. He's, Eric, I spend some time internally getting the seats at our own table to better understand how we do things as a company at TransUnion in his case, so that I can turn around and help my enablement team enable our folks how to speak to those folks. And I'm modeling it. And it's like a 3-for-1. To me, Brian, that's the spirit of orchestration. And as the co-founder, I'd love to hear through your lens, whether or not that what you were thinking when you and Scott, the ones that came up with this, and Scott, I know, did a ton of deep and wide research that I still have yet to tap into. So what is orchestration to you? And am I on to something there?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that orchestration is, and being an orchestrator, it's in the continuum of evolving to a digital economy. Businesses are moving from siloed organizations to eventually some sort of interconnected web of an ecosystem, right? So if you step way out and say, look, you know, in the late 1800s, we had silos, and that's the Industrial Revolution. Technically, we're in the fourth wave of that, which eventually will become the first wave of this idea of being a digital economy and a digital era. And that's all happened in our lifetimes. It's been exponentially fast. You and I are in the age of, we didn't even have iPhones growing up, and our phones were on the wall. With the cord. So the exponential speed of that, and if you look at why, and I know I'm going to get a little historical, a little zen, but anytime that there's massive advancements like that, there's upheaval. So you end up in the space of social unrest, civil unrest. This happened in every age. Like it's a repeatable pattern, what we're going through. And when you start looking at the repeatable patterns, you're going to see businesses having to, their laws are not keeping up with what's happening. That's why back in the Industrial Revolution, they put kids in factories. Oops, that's a bad idea, right? The laws were not caught up with factories back then. So that's happening now. So the reason why I'm bringing that up is if you look around at what we're so attached to, whether it's the school systems or the business systems, those the elements are not capitalism. The elements are like the idea of how you organize an entity, for example, silos. So let's just pick on silos are from the Industrial Revolution. I think everybody knows that, but why is it so hard to get rid of them? It's because everything is built around them and you can't even function from a finance perspective to a product launch perspective, et cetera. But if you look at it, we really don't need them. We're all in a hyper-connected digital world, the work from home thing, et cetera, where technically silos shouldn't matter, should they? But when you look at fast forward, there needs to be eventually a way in which we don't have silos and they don't become the organizing structure. Silos are impeding our ability to communicate value. They're impeding our ability to be productive. They're impeding our ability to actually have a coherent conversation internally. There's a massive challenge with silos that everybody looks the other way on because it's part of the norm. So that's why orchestrators are so darn important. When you remove the siloed fabric of a company, they become a new glue that brings people together to achieve the mission, to achieve outcomes and objectives, to be a catalyst and to make things happen. So it's more about the team that gets created on the fly than it is about where you sit. Mm-hmm. That's why it's valuable and critical for companies to figure out how to do this. And orchestrators are the first through the wall.
Orchestration is dead. Long live orchestration. And here's where I'm going with that. What if, and this is total blasphemy, enablement is not the right place for orchestration? What if it is the CRO role? Like as a, for instance, where what I'm seeing again, a lot of is that, hey, I want to be a CRO through the lens of now I've got sales and marketing reporting into me. I can help them play nice. I can align everything. I can drive the metrics. I'm leaning more maybe rev ops than sales ops in how I'm got a partner in those metrics. Is orchestration maybe where enablement moves into a CRO, CMO, CSO, strategy officer?
Yeah, I think it's closer to there today. Hmm. Sales enablement has been recast as the training function and the event planners, if you will, of the sales org. So I don't see it suddenly, like you said at the beginning, there's 6 million pages right now. When you hit it, what those are about is going to largely be training and shooting on salespeople and telling them what to do. And it's going to be about sales kickoffs and new hire training and onboarding, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Which is important. It's just not all of it.
And it is, I'm not going to say it's not important. I would just question how valuable it is to the company and to the people in it. Again, I have a very visceral reaction because I've seen salespeople get fired from having enablement teams. So if you have an enablement team, then why do salespeople get fired? And then where's the accountability? But I could also say that from marketing. I could say that from messaging enablement. I could say that for sales operations. So what I'm saying is not, I'm not just picking on sales enablement. To me, it's everybody that says they try to help sales. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the org chart's in the way. We have to figure out how to be orchestrators and be more strategic and figure out how to provide services and less about where we sit on the org chart. So
got it.
I think that's definitely a path to more value.
And so there's the place for orchestration. Step up, whether you're from the enablement lens, a CRO, a CMO, it is a gap. It is a strategic gap that can be filled and can thrive.
Thanks for joining us. To become an insider and amplify your journey, please make sure you've subscribed to our show.
You can do so at orchestratesales.com/podcast.